Hello and welcome. I'm Sam Harris, and it is my true honor and pleasure to host you here on the Growth Mindset podcast. I talk to amazing individuals about how they achieve their dreams and break down the strategies it takes to lead explosive tech businesses to being paid to travel the world. I deep dive into topics such as Bitcoin and fintech, or just how to get stuff done, with the goal of increasing our own collective wisdom and making us all happier, healthier, and wealthier. Who doesn't want that? Hello, people. Coming at you from the lovely land of Surrey in the south of England today. We are having a crazy heatwave in Britain, and I feel more like I'm in the south of Italy. It's a little bit worrying that it's been going on all summer now, and global warming is not really the best thing for everything, and most stuff seems to be dying. But on a more positive note, I have a very, very interesting interview for you today. I am talking to a person known as who I met in New Zealand in a hostel, and turns out he was a hacker, and he's part of the Anonymous Hacking Group, and claims to be involved in the infamous Hack the World Banks hack of 2017, where they brought down a lot of the world banks, which is pretty crazy. He's also stolen over 45 Bitcoin. 45 Bitcoin, that's a lot of money. And at the time I was with him, it was worth more like 15 grand a Bitcoin. Right now it's not so much, but who knows, still ridiculous. Anyway, he now spends his time doing ethical hacking services and lighthearted hacks just to expose vulnerabilities and send surprise jokes to people. But he has a very crazy life story and some amazing insights into the world of the dark web and hacking, and his great advice of how to secure yourself online. And it's just a really great episode where I think you'll learn a ton, and maybe a little, well, maybe you'll learn to be a bit more terrified about the world around you afterwards. I do try to avoid swearing too much on the podcast because it's not really a polite thing to be doing. But this episode does have an unusual amount of the word beginning with F. So if you have children, this might not be the best podcast to listen to with them. Although it is very informative. So if you don't mind them hearing words beginning with F, then carry on listening. Otherwise, you might need to listen to this podcast alone. And on that note, please enjoy my interview from New Zealand with the infamous... Welcome to the Growth Mindset podcast.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here. So I've just met you here in my hostel room and found out that you're a hacker and you've done cool shit with Bitcoin and Wi-Fi addresses. And yeah, I've made one note to myself to whenever you say something to ask, but how? Because I have a feeling you're going to say a lot of cool shit and I'm just going to be like, wow, that's amazing. And then just move on and be like, actually, maybe I should work out what it is you've actually just said. And yeah, in general, I should probably tell you what's going on in the podcast. So we like to find cool people that do stuff that's interesting to people that maybe they haven't heard of and find out like how they actually do it and how people might want to get into these things. So firstly, I guess it would be nice to have a bit of an introduction about you.
All right, about me. Originally, I was from South Africa. Our parents came here because the crime rate was horrible. Guns point at you almost every day. So we gave up that life, came here, and it's been great. New Zealand's so safe. We love it.
Cool. So you left an unsafe country and then you started doing unsafe things.
I wouldn't call it unsafe. It was more, I didn't really have much to do because, you know, I've been described as having Asperger's, so I'm not really social.
Yeah.
So my best friend is my computer. So since we got to New Zealand, I got a computer and pretty much spent every single day on it, learning how to program, learning how to create websites.
Mm.
And then from there, I asked my stepdad, because he works in IT. I was at 11 at the time. I asked him if it was possible to hack into other computers because I wanted to hack into my school computers to get the test results.
Yeah.
And he said that it's impossible to hack. So I thought, fuck you, I'm going to try and do it.
Nice.
So, yeah, so since then, every single day, I've been trying to learn.
Cool. Well, that's a good growth mindset attitude of, oh, I can't do this, I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Nice. So can you tell me how you broke into your school computers?
At the time, I wasn't able to break into the school computers because I was still learning.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't even know what a network was. So okay. I had no idea how to even connect to a remote computer.
Yeah. So you didn't actually break into school computers, but you started learning more about hacking and things
yeah.
from that.
So my My first actual, it's not really a hack, it's a shit hack. It's called a DDoS attack, a denial of service. That was my first one I did. What that does is it brings down websites. It practically just floods a website with too many requests, so it can't handle all of those requests at once, so it shuts down.
Okay, and how do you go about setting up a denial of service attack?
The one I've got right now, I've programmed it in Python, and essentially what it does is it refreshes the page 1,000 times per second.
Mm.
Now, if you imagine a bus, right? You're lining up for a bus stop, and there's 5 people there. The bus comes, those 5 people easily get onto the bus,
yeah.
Just like a website. Now, a denial of service attack is putting 1,000 people there, so not everyone can get on the bus. So if you're at the back of the line, you're not going to get on.
Cool. Okay. I was wondering, just in, like, if you're a magician or something, it's like the magic circle, and like, if you're in, you're in. Like, what would be the level of, is there like a certain thing, like once you've done this hack, you're in the circle of hackers? Like, would it be like this denial of service attack that to be able to call yourself a hacker? Or
some people call themselves hackers from doing denial of service attacks.
Mm.
See, I've been with Anonymous, it's an international hacker group, for about 5-6 years now. And the first attack that they launched was a denial of service attack on the web servers of Scientology. And so we awesome. Get people that were not hackers, didn't know anything that they were doing, and we gave them a program, and that program was low orbit ion cannon. And because they didn't really know how to hack, they weren't using a VPN, so their IP wasn't masked. So yeah. Even though they were able to bring down the website in a successful hack, they were caught.
Yeah.
So they didn't know how to stay secure. So it's hard to say when you're in.
Yeah.
It's when you're in is you've been hacking for a amount of years and you haven't got caught.
Yeah. Okay. Are there any, so the circles within the hackers, like, have you sort of had like these anonymous emails and be like, oh, we're this hacker group, you've been hacking for so long, you should come join us or something?
No, how I got involved with that was, it was with Scientology. It all started on Reddit.
Yeah.
And people were posting, because on Reddit, you can post not under your real name, so it comes up as anonymous. So that's where it all started. And then shortly after, we made an IRC channel, which is an instant relay chat. So you get about 1,000 hackers at once, all on this IRC channel, talking to each other from Anonymous. Yeah. And then that's when we were planning out all the attack.
Cool.
So once you're in that circle, you know, it's pretty.
Yeah. So if you're a spy or something working for an agency, like as in the CIA or something, and you wanted to stop people hacking, would it be a good place to be on Reddit and pretend to be another hacker and try and get into these groups?
If you're working for a spy agency trying to stop hacks,
yeah,
I would assume you know what you're doing, so you wouldn't need to do that.
Okay, but as in to see what the next hack is coming and to be inside those groups kind of thing.
Right, yeah. That is a good idea to see what people are coming up with.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, is it hard to trust other people even when they say there are hackers online?
Definitely. You could have a 5-year-old go on the IRC channel.
Yeah.
And say he's done this and that, and you just don't know whether to believe him or not.
Yeah. Do you use any screening questions to like get people to prove who they are before you trust them with anything, or you just have no trust at all?
We don't have trust. The trust comes with being with Anonymous for a while. So you get to know, we have handles, so we use fake names online. So you start to get an idea of how that person, like, what's he like, what's his name. So you can build trust with them. It's just if you knew and you go into the IRC channel, no one will trust you.
Yeah.
If you knew and you go onto the channel and you say, hey guys, let's do this, no one will do it.
Sure.
But if you've been with them, if you help them out, and if they know they can trust you, then you can do stuff like that.
Yeah. So if you're new and you join and you aren't too sure about what you're doing, how likely is it that someone will give you an idea that actually ends up with you being hacked? Like, how do I do this? And they sort of send you some software that actually...
Yeah, very high. I've done it before.
Okay. Can you tell me how that happened?
There's multiple ways. You can make them go to phishing website.
Yeah.
So, for example, you can tell them to check out this news website. So they go and type in that address, but it takes them to a fake Facebook login. It says, please log on to Facebook to continue this to the site.
Yeah.
And then they log on, so you've got the password. And the newbies, they don't know how that works, so they won't be able to tell a phishing site from an actual site.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's funny. Okay, so backtracking a bit. So what then took you in the process from you first started learning about hacking at school to then where you are now? I guess the next stage of, you started learning a bit then at school, so you carried on doing the rest of school and then...
No, I dropped out of school because, you know, I was at high school, we were learning about English and maths and all these irrelevant subjects. And in my head, I wanted to be in IT. So high school wasn't cutting it for me. I didn't learn any. So I dropped out and spent every day learning programming.
Okay, so what age did you drop out?
I dropped out at...
Okay, and you just started making money online instantly?
I started off with hacking people, hacking PayPal accounts.
Yeah.
Just for bit of fun. So I got money that way, and then it got to a point where I was like, a lot of my mates were getting arrested. Like, for example, one of the guys had the police station, and he got sent to jail. And after that, I thought, fuck, I could go to jail next week if I did something wrong. So that's when I started going along the lines of, I can approach companies and still hack them, but then secure them and teach them how to stay secure so they can not get hacked.
Okay, so just backtrack a bit. So how did your friend get caught for hacking into a police station?
When you join a network, right, your phone has what we call a MAC address.
Mm-hmm.
And a MAC address is pretty much like a fingerprint or a device. So when he hacked a police network, he used his own MAC address. So he broke onto the network and the DHCP server logged his MAC address. So that's how they're able to find him. They're able to see what type of phone was used to do the hack.
Yeah.
And then I don't know how they did it in the end, but because of that MAC address, they went to his house, tested his router to see if it had the same MAC address.
Yeah.
And obviously it did. So that's how they got the proof.
So if he wanted to do that again, could he have changed the way he did it to protect himself?
So, for example, I can clone your MAC address right now. Go and hack the police web servers, and then you'll get arrested for that.
Okay. To someone that doesn't know much about it, what does that mean exactly?
So cloning a MAC address, how do you explain? When you connected, for example, this network here at the Backpackers, it's called Zenboom. So you connect, and then you type in the code to have internet access. When you type in that code, it sends it to the DHCP server, and that server recognizes your MAC address, which is your fingerprint.
Yeah, and just to clarify, MAC address is any computer, not actually your Apple MAC address.
Yeah, it's anything. So your phone will have its own MAC address. Yes. This computer will have its own MAC address. It's all different. Okay. So the server...
This is like your own ID, like you have a passport, I have a passport.
Yeah, it's essentially your phone's finger.
Yeah.
Because technically no MAC ID won't be a duplicate of a MAC address. They're all different, but you can clone MAC addresses.
Yeah.
And how you do that, for example, in this network, this is how we can get free internet, is if you join the network and if you type in your code to have internet, the DCHP server recognizes the code and says, okay, this MAC address, your one, has, say, a gig of data.
Yeah.
What a hacker can do is scan the network, see what's connected to the network, and also its MAC address. So I can pick up your MAC address and clone it, then join the network so the network thinks I'm your device and I have internet.
Cool. So yeah, when you have places that don't require an actual password, but it's just whatever MAC address you have like just a limit. Like if you're in, or you have a 30-minute free, you're in the airport or something.
Yeah.
You can just put a random new MAC address on your thing so you can just fake it.
Yeah.
And so that's a lot easier than scanning for other people.
Yes. Yeah. The only reason why you'd scan is if you have to pay for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's really cool because quite often you're like in train stations and they have like a paid for service as well. Yeah. And like you get unlimited if you pay, so it doesn't actually hurt the person. and then you have like way better internet. I'm going to learn to do that. Cool. Thanks.
It's really simple.
Yeah. Nice. Maybe I'll put that in the note. Okay. So anyway, back to the story. Your friends were getting arrested and you start getting scared. What do you think that you've ever come really close to getting caught?
I wouldn't have a clue. I posted an anonymous video a couple of years ago on YouTube. It was related to a politician called Peter Dunn.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically, see, his son worked with the synthetic drugs.
Yeah.
So he was a lawyer for them. So we had this big idea that Peter Dunn didn't want to legalize marijuana because his son would lose profit.
Mm-hmm.
So we posted a video to Peter Dunn. And at the time, there was this kid in hospital called Alex Renton. He was in an induced coma. He had something wrong with his... Something happened in his brain. He ended up dying, but his family wanted him to get medical cannabis as a last resort just to try it out.
Sure.
And so we posted a video to Peter Dunn saying, hey, you either give it to us or expect to be hacked.
Yeah.
Anyway, Alex got medical cannabis. And I went to Peter Dunn the following day at a place called Backbenchers, where politicians used to do radio, TV interviews. And because I knew he didn't know I posted the video, I asked him, has he seen it? And he said, yeah, it's been passed into the GCSB, which is the NSA of New Zealand.
Sure.
It was pretty fucked up. So that's the closest I would say I've been caught is the GCSB have a video I posted and they're trying to track me.
And you instantly went and asked about it.
Yeah.
So sometimes putting yourself in plain view can be kind of protected, but you think if no one else that even knows about this video, well, it gets posted online, but it's still...
Yeah, so no one knew it was me, which is the whole idea, and I posted it with VPN, so they couldn't trace it back.
Okay, and then you did just say all the specifics and now spoken about it on the podcast. Are you worried about then releasing that if he ever listened to this?
I could just deny it.
Good point. Okay, as long as you feel right. Have you gone a lot into legal... Sorry, my computer. Have you done a lot of like legal research just to sort of see how to protect yourself specifically so you know what you can and can't say when talking about things?
No, absolutely not.
Okay. Does that worry you? That
see, I can talk about hacking all day and every hack I've done. And you can go to the police, for example, and tell them everything.
Yeah.
But there's no way that they can prove that back to me.
Sure.
For example, I can do a hack from your MAC address. You go to the police, you'll get arrested for it.
Yeah. Okay. But what if you done something crazy serious that, say, you admitted to, being the person that launched Stuxnet or something super huge, and then, like, the CEO, like, fuck, we're just gonna, like, arrest this guy, and even if we haven't got full evidence, or I guess you just haven't done that, it doesn't really matter. So maybe this is a null question.
There's no way I've done Stuxnet, but I have done ransomware.
Yeah?
Not me personally, I've coded ransomware into a USB stick that acts as a keyboard.
Wow.
So I sold that to a guy with a brain tumor up in New Plymouth. The only reason I sold it to him was he has a family.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wants to leave with a bit of money.
Okay.
So I was like, fuck it, I can sell you some ransomware.
That's kind of like Robin Hood, I guess.
Yeah, no, it was crazy. So a day after I sold it to him, I looked on the news, stuff.co.nz. You can have a look at he launched on a taxi company. So yeah, taxi service got hit with the ransomware I programmed.
Wow, that's cool. What was the name of that website?
Stuff.co.nz.
Stuff.
Yeah, Stuff.
.co.nz.
So if you Google Stuff Taxi Hack, it'll come up.
That was Stuff, not Stuff.
Yeah, S-T-U-F-F.
Cool. Okay, I'll do that. All right, so now going forwards, what are you doing? So you say you now run a ethical hacking business.
Yeah, so since my friend got arrested for hacking the police, I thought, you know, the next one could be me. If I do one little mistake, and it's the thing about hacking is it's not hard to hack. It's more hard as staying anonymous and staying hidden.
Yeah.
So you could just have one small slip up. Or, for example, you could be taking down a website, and if your VPN disconnects and you're still launching an attack, they've got your IP address.
Yeah.
So anything could happen, and then you could get sent to jail.
Sure.
So I started thinking, I still love hacking, like, I'm really good at it, so why don't I try and use it for something good? So I started a company called, which is in. So what we do is we audit companies and we hack them like a black hat hacker. Mm. So we do anything we can to gain access to their servers, their computers, or their website. And if we do, we tell them how we are able to access it and how they can stay secure.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds much better for humanity. Do you have the idea of like an example client, or could it be anyone, like super small, super big?
One example client, it was actually a company I used to work for called The Kensington. It's a brothel, but I was doing their IT shit. Nice. So I was installing the cameras and whatnot. But the thing is, with that company, the so-called manager, his wife actually owned the company. But the guy, he pretended to run it. So he told me he was a manager.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, whatever. But it turns out he was using the company's money to buy himself crack. So he soon got fired. And because he was the admin of the website, he thought it'd be a good idea to say that the company was closed. So we didn't get any customers. So I was the guy who hacked back into that website, stole it back from him, logged him out.
Yeah.
Now the company's running fine.
Yeah. Nice. Everybody's happy.
Yeah. So that's a good client.
Yeah. Then that's like a typical client then? A
typical client is, you know, we have a sales team in Wellington and they go up to companies and say, hey, is your company secure? And most of the time they say, yeah. And they say, well, we can hack you free. And if we're able to hack you, we'll charge you to patch the vulnerability.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. And have you tried doing that with any big companies, like a
not big
airline
companies
or anything? Cool.
A-line, what's cool about A-lines is you can just hack it for fun.
Yeah.
Like, you know those little TVs at the back of the seat?
Mm-hmm.
I plugged in the USB and was able to get Facebook open on the screen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. You know, like airlines, often you'll search on an airline and it'll come up with like a price and you're like, shit, I want to get this. And then you like, you talk about it and then go back half an hour later and the price is like twice the price. You're like, fuck. Is there a way to get back to the original price or even a cheaper price?
There's not a way to make the server go back. But what you can do is use programs like, for example, Burp Suite. And what that does is it intercepts whatever you do. So, for example, if you press search flight, if you book a flight, let's say it was a $200 ticket to Wellington, and then you press book, and then the page will refresh to another page. But before it does that, all that data has gone through that program, Burp Suite, and you can edit every field that it has. So you can say, okay, the price originally was $200, but we needed it to be $2. Mm. So then the server thinks it's $2.
Yeah.
So you're not changing anything on the server. You're just changing what gets posted back to it.
Okay. And that works sometimes?
It won't work on... just an example of how you do it. That. You have to edit the data before it gets sent to the server.
Cool. Interesting. Okay, so you say you now have a company, so how many employees have you got?
I've got two at the moment.
Okay, how do you go about recruiting?
That's the thing, I never really thought of it. I actually met this guy at a pub in Wellington. He's an old guy, and he said he was going to an interview. He was a sales agent, and I was like, well, if you can sell, how about I try you out?
Yeah.
And turns out he has a massive customer base.
Yeah.
So he's really my main guy. And then I've got this other guy, Jake. He's my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
He helps out a lot as well, just going around to companies, asking them about their websites.
Okay, cool. So in terms of your growth strategy, it's just getting more salespeople?
That's what I'm planning. I originally came down to Christchurch in hopes to get a new sales team. But I've been at a backpackers, partying every night with everyone. Yeah, haven't really got time to do that.
Nice. So is the actual hacking part quite fast in terms of that's not your limit right now? It's more just getting more customers.
Yeah. So with a hack, 20 minutes and we're in a company.
Yeah. So couldn't you just start hacking companies and just sort of say, oh, we're ethical hackers and just start going around like a list of them? And
I've started doing that. Sales. I did one a couple of days ago, New Zealand Psychologist Board.
Yeah.
I found out that their web servers are vulnerable to SQL injection. So what that means is we can gain access to their whole database. Mm-hmm. So we can get all their credentials. We can get people's phone numbers, addresses, emails. And, you know, everything that the site has, the whole database we can have. So I emailed them saying that they have a SQL vulnerability, and that was last week, and I haven't heard anything back. Now, the thing is with that is that gives them ammo to go to the police and say that they're
right. Okay, so it's better to have qualified leads that actually want to be hacked rather than than just going and hacking randomly. Because,
And then another one I did like that was a company called Jeeves Scaffolding in Wellington.
Yeah.
This was completely out of the blue. I was using this, a $60 phone.
Wow.
Bought it at the warehouse. I walked past the company. They had a secure encryption with their router. It was WPA. And literally just walking past them, I was able to break into the network.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
So I went into the company and told them about it, but I was shaking because they could have just turned around the police.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a hard one. Like sometimes when people, I haven't heard of something exactly like that, but sometimes you just see people making like a massive mistake and you just want to tell them, but sometimes they just don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
They think you're a dick and you're like, well, do I just sort of tell you, like, you're about to completely fuck everything up? And yeah. Trying to think of a specific example, but
yeah, it's a lot safer
that feeling.
Asking them to if we can hack them first, then going, hey, we hacked you, and then they're like, oh fuck, we got hacked.
Yeah, I think it's pushing on the defensive, like,
yeah,
fuck. Okay, so you haven't recruited any other hackers then yet?
I do have a hacker. He's in Auckland at the moment. He's also part of Anonymous, and I've been talking to him for about 3 years now, so I've built up a lot of trust with him. So when we get a customer that has a web server that they want to order, if I can't do it, I'll pass it on to him to see what he can.
Sure. Okay. So you haven't really got any specific interview style questions or anything then?
No, I've never interviewed before for this. I've only given the position to people who I know and who I trust.
Sure. But on a more surface level of just when you meet people, do you have any favourite questions just to turn things into a more interesting conversation or to get deeper rather than just talking about random, like, oh, where are you from, what's your stuff?
When, for example, the guy that does my sales, he told me that he was having an interview for a sales company. So I asked him, hey, how long have you been in sales for? And he said he's been in sales for about 30 years. So instantly I was like, he's probably got a huge customer base.
Yeah.
So I asked him, hey, what's your customer base like? And he said he's got a massive list of people. And I said, if I told you to sell me a website, could you do it for me today? And he said he can call about 30 people right now. I was like, sweet, that's good enough for me.
Okay.
Because I'm not paying them per hour or anything.
Yeah.
I'm only paying them if they sell. So if he sells a website for $2,000, he gets 100 commission.
Sure. Okay. Interesting. In terms of generally just going a bit more into hacking and things, then quite interesting. How, if I wanted to start learning, what would you recommend I start doing?
Learn how a network functions. If you don't know how a network functions, it's going to be extremely difficult for you. Because when you know how a network works, you know how devices communicate to each other, you know what ports they use.
Yeah.
And then from there, you can fuck around with those and break it.
Okay, cool. Do you have any favorite tutorials, or is it all so long ago that you...
Tutorials? I've actually posted my own tutorial online.
Yeah?
Oh. Favorite tutorials, YouTube channel called Hack5. And Hack5 is where I got that little Wi-Fi pineapple from.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Can you explain what a Wi-Fi pineapple is?
A Wi-Fi pineapple is a device that's almost like a router. So I'll use this as an example. Your phone or your computer, when you go home at night, it automatically connects to your router because mm-hmm. your router is on its PNL list, which is a preferred network list. So your phone is always constantly searching, hey, home network, are you available? Hey, office network, are you available? Because it's connected before. What the Wi-Fi pineapple does is it picks out those beacon requests and says, yeah, I'm your home network, connect to me.
Sure.
So your phone connects to the Wi-Fi pineapple, and from there, you know, all their internet's going through that. So you can see what they're browsing and see the photos that they see. You can strip the SSL, which means when they log on to Facebook, you can have those credentials.
Yeah.
Or you can make them go to a web server, download a payload, which allows you remote access and you get onto the web camera or install ransomware.
Okay, cool. And so but if I have a Wi-Fi pineapple, does that mean I instantly have a user interface, just click button,
yeah.
strip thing, or...
Yeah, so it's a user interface.
Okay, that's nice. Yeah, for anyone that doesn't actually know what they're doing. So could you do quite a lot of hacking without actually being a good coder?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Okay, that's kind of good, but kind of worrying.
Like, for example, right now, I can teach you hacks that don't require any programming, and I can make you break into a web server or hack into someone's computer.
Okay, let's go through both of those. How do I break into a web server?
These are a lot of different ways. How do you explain it? Like, these SQL, for example, the one I did most recently.
Mm-hmm.
With SQL, what you want to do is when a web server has, for example, at the end of a URL, you see PHP equals ID 1, right? Have
yeah.
you ever seen that?
Yes.
Now, if you take away the 1, so PHP equals apostrophe, mm-hmm. that fucks up the web server. So if there's a vulnerability in the SQL, it'll come back with an error saying you have an error in your SQL database. Now, if you use a program called SQL Map or SQL Ninja, you're able to access their database. And then there's a whole lot, like these Burp Suite, these DDoS attacks. You can brute force the admin. You can have phishing websites.
Mm.
Like the first day I came here, I hosted a phishing site.
Yeah.
With Senbu login. But the thing is with that, I didn't get any logins. So I started cloning MAC addresses.
Yeah.
And as you can tell, I used all your internet.
Yeah. That was funny one day. Logged on and then sort of, did like one thing. And then logged on a bit later. All my internet was gone. And now I know why. But it's interesting. My friend actually wanted to start doing a host your own phishing so people could just log in and like build their own phishing scam to do stuff. But then it was like, okay, maybe people are going to do this for bad things. So we didn't do it, which is good. Anyway, you were then going to tell me about how to hack into a PC.
How to hack into a PC. Again, there's many ways. The two main ways I do it is using the Wi-Fi Pineapple or using a program called Armitage.
Okay.
So essentially you use them together, Armitage and the Wi-Fi Pineapple. So with the Wi-Fi Pineapple, you would make their computer, for example, Zenbu, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you click join network, it takes you to their login page. That's what you call a landing page. So with the Wi-Fi Pineapple, you can have your own landing page that downloads a payload in the background and it goes straight onto the running services. And that payload allows you to access the computer via command line.
Yeah.
So once you're on the command line, you can look at any file that they have on their computer, add files, delete files, access the web camera.
Okay, cool. So to protect myself, I should try and keep things online then? So
To protect yourself from that is when you're out in town,
yeah.
keep your Wi-Fi off. Don't join public networks.
Yeah.
When you're at home, when you join your home network, make sure that there's not a duplicate home network. For example, home router 1. Okay, you would want to make sure that there's only one of those. If there's two of those, there's a chance someone's cloning your home router in hopes you're connecting to them, thinking you're connected to your home router.
Okay, cool.
And then another way is, I see at the backpackers, a lot of people leave their laptops open.
Yeah.
And they leave the room for a few seconds. That's all it will take for me to plug in a USB. 3 seconds later, I've got shell access to that computer.
Okay.
So this USB stick acts as a keyboard. So it essentially types Windows R to bring up a run box, types a PowerShell script to bring up the terminal on an admin level, and then tells the computer to connect to Mark all in 3 seconds.
And then you unplug the USB, but you still got access.
Yeah, so you unplug the USB, So it looks like nothing's wrong with that computer.
Yeah.
Come back to it thinking nothing happened, but, oh, shit. You know, I'm on their computer.
Yeah. So also, because some PCs you can say, so when you shut the lid, it doesn't actually stop as well.
Yeah. But when you shut the lid, it usually locks it.
Yeah, yeah, usually, but I can set it on my Mac so it actually it carries on running and never even
gets standby.
Yeah, so that would be like a really bad thing to do.
Whenever you're not around your computer or your phone, have it or disconnected from a network. Yeah,
so I'll admit, I turned my computer off last night because I was like, we had a conversation about Bitcoin and like, I was only briefly in it for 5 minutes, but I had said that I had like a lot of different exchanges and like a wallet and was like, shit, this guy just admitted to like stealing a lot of Bitcoin. And I just mentioned I have like lots of different like exchanges. Like, maybe I'll turn my computer off and it'll be fine.
No, see, with hacking, because a lot of my friends have got arrested, yeah. I won't hack people that I tell them hack.
Yeah.
Because you can go to the police and tell them. Even though there might be a chance I won't get arrested, it's because you have that initial evidence of, hey.
Yeah, yeah, it's just initial. Yeah. Stuff to get, like,
so if I'm targeting someone, they'll have no idea about it.
Okay. So would you say that's probably your number one tip for staying secure? Is just always be like really distant away from the person that you're hacking?
No, daily in Wellington, when I catch the bus into town,
yeah,
I usually route everyone on the bus through the Wi-Fi Pineapple.
Yeah.
And I display a message on the phone usually saying, you've been hacked, regards anonymous. Or if I'm at a library, for example, I can get most of the library connected to me.
Yeah.
Because the library's quiet, I find it funny if I play gay porn on computers. So all of a sudden, you just hear this.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's nice. You're not worried that maybe there'll be like young children and stuff in the library, or
yeah, there could be, but it's not my problem.
Okay, that's amazing. Cool.
Just for a bit of fun, and another thing is McDonald's as well.
Yeah.
You know, you join McDonald's free Wi-Fi, and then all of a sudden you've got a page coming up saying you want a free Big Mac.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're gonna take that to front counter. It's really funny, nice. Tricking people.
That's well good.
So a lot of shit I do is pranks.
Yeah.
And I do it in such a way that it can't get traced back to me.
Sure. Okay. What was the first prank you ever did?
My first prank? Probably just shutting down people's computers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My friend had that. I remember when I was like 14 or something. He had like a USB that like, he plugged in and like your computer just went like, oh, shit. Oh, no. Oh, I'm shutting down.
Yeah.
It was like, mate, what have you just done? Fuck off.
And another one is you can write like literally four lines of code and save it as a .exe.
Mm.
And you can have stuff pop up. Like you can have massive amounts of Notepad just randomly pop up. And internet things pop up and then it shuts down.
Yeah.
I used to do that to my friends and send them those payloads. So they would click it and I think they have a virus on the computer, but it just shuts it down and restarts and it's fine.
Cool. Yeah, it's kind of... what would you say is the biggest risk you've ever taken?
Biggest risk I've taken was with Anonymous. It was an operation called Op Icarus. At the time, we were taking down banking websites. We took down Rothschilds, we took down Central Bank of America, banks around the UK, banks around Europe. And what we were doing is we were just DDoSing their servers so no one could do any online banking. But a couple of people got arrested for that and spent 10 years in jail.
Yeah.
So that's probably one of the most riskiest things I've done.
But when they arrest people like that, do they try and give them reduced time for
ratting out the other people? Yeah. Yeah. There was this guy with Anonymous. His name is Hector Monsega.
Mm.
His handle was Sabu. And he was around when Anonymous started. He was fucking great. Then he got caught by the FBI and he had a family. So the FBI said, you're going to spend life in prison or you're going to work for us.
Yeah.
Become an informant. So he was like, fuck it, I'll work for you guys and I'll become an informant. And
yeah.
Then he went onto the web chat and he ratted out a whole bunch of people.
Shit.
Yeah, so if you go on the web chat now with the handle Sabu, you're going to get a lot of hate.
Yeah, okay. So it's hard to trust people and tell them anything about yourself.
Yeah, so that's why you don't need to really tell people who you are.
Mm. Yeah, do you know much about any recent hacks lately that have been going on, like the one last year that sort of took down NHS and loads of people? That was like a rant.
Oh, WannaCry and...
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple ransomware attacks. Yeah, no, I knew about that. It originally came from apparently North Korea.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
Yeah, so they just wanted to fuck up everything they could.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't really look too much into it because I thought it'd be fucking awesome because that's the time I made my ransomware.
Yeah.
It was after that had happened. I was like, this is a great idea. So instead of researching about that, I researched my own ransomware and I made my own ones. But my ransomware was more localized, so it didn't hop around on servers.
Yeah.
Except for the taxi ransomware. So he plugged it into the server. It sent the payload to Christchurch.
Yeah.
So New Plymouth and Christchurch got attacked.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool. That's interesting. So I'm actually going to North Korea in a few weeks.
Crazy.
Do you think I should try and install some ransomware to take them back?
No, I would say be careful there, because I know a lot of hackers around those areas. And, you know, those guys are fucking amazing. They have fake cell phone towers.
Yeah.
So you could be texting people, making a phone call, but a hacker could be intercepted.
Wow.
And that happens all.
So basically, if you're not entirely sure what you're doing, just stay away. Keep yourself safe.
And the crazy thing about hacking is most of it goes unnoticed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you could be making a phone call thinking, you know, it's all secure, but a hacker's listen. Or if you text your credit card details, boom, it's going to get out the next day.
Yeah. Scary. Yeah, I actually worked on the oil rigs for a while and was actually very ethically against it, apart from the fact that it was just super interesting to go there and like learn about the industry. But I was like, if I knew more, it was like quite tempting to try and do like a Stuxnet or something just to take them all down. But I was like, fuck it, I have no clue what I'm doing.
See, I'm pretty sure Stuxnet was the one with the nuclear power
plant. Yeah, it was nuclear power plants.
Yeah, it was almost like an AI. It read the fans and how fast the fans were going.
Yeah.
And then it made fans go way too fast. And it told the system that the fans were spinning normally.
Yeah.
And then core of the fan broke.
Yeah, it was quite cool. But I remember, it was really cool that they did that, but the technology behind getting it to spread and stuff was like kind of cooler than the actual problem that they then did. And it's kind of like, well, they could have done something much cooler with that. Because once they found it, they fixed it. And then it was then kind of more public, like how they did it. And so everyone now has access to that. Seemed a bit silly. So, I guess going on to cryptocurrencies. How did you hack and end up with cryptocurrencies?
So we would find out people who have cryptocurrencies, and we would make sure that they don't know who we are.
Yeah.
We would go with the Wi-Fi pineapple outside their house. Then we would monitor their internet usage, and if they have a wallet that's online, we could pick up that website that they're going to. So we could clone that website, and then we'd kick them off their internet, route them through the Wi-Fi pineapple. And when they browse, for example, Coinbase.com, we can make that website route to our phishing. Sure. So they think they're on Coinbase, but they're on my phishing server. Then they log in.
Yeah.
And you have their credentials. But most of the time, they use two-factor authentication.
Yeah.
So with that, we have to get their email as well.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask, how do people protect themselves when they're using these things, like doing the cryptocurrencies?
The best thing to do is use two-factor authentication, because if someone has your wallet password and you don't have two-factor authentication, they can straight away break into it.
Yeah.
If you use two-factor authentication, it either sends a text to your phone or an email.
Sure. So if you're... So it's unlikely that you'd ever be able to find like a Bitcoin whale or something just because they'd be too protected.
Sorry?
You know like the term whale, someone that has like a buttload of Bitcoins or something. It's unlikely for you to ever be able to hack someone like that because they'd probably know what they're doing and be too protected for you.
No, a lot of the time they don't know what they're doing. They just think it's a new phase, invest a lot of money into Bitcoin. And like the guy with the brain tumor saw that ransomware too.
Yeah.
He's now gotten to a lot of Bitcoin accounts from that ransomware.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you tempted to go somewhere that is like a bit of a Bitcoin sort of hub just for a weekend and try and make a shit ton of money and like run away?
No, because at the moment I've got 85 Bitcoin.
Oh, that's all right.
So I'm sorted for shit. Bitcoin, and I'm staying away from the black hat hacking.
Yeah, probably just be very content with what you've got.
Yeah, and I don't want to be too greedy because
there's no point. Before. Yeah, that's fine. And maybe if it does go up to like 100 grand of Bitcoin,
I'm sorted for life.
And if not, I'd still be tempted to sell like a few at this point because
it's
already worth lots, and that'd be nice. Anyway, sure, cool. How much of that was stolen? Then.
Probably about half of it.
Wow.
And this was when Bitcoin was sort of first coming out.
Yeah.
So it was a couple cents, and it was $200, $400.
Yeah.
So people would put like their weekly pay into it and get like 5-6 Bitcoin. And then like, oh, fuck it, I'm going to take it. So I got about 40 odd bins from doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, about 3 years ago.
Okay. So you haven't done that recently and such?
No.
I was going to say that'd be pretty scary trying to take that much Bitcoin right now. It's like suddenly a lot of money.
Yeah.
Ah, well, that was an interesting thing to invest in back then. Did you have any clue that it might be going up at the time? Were you like, this is a good investment, I'm going to get some Bitcoin? Or was it just like, oh, this is kind of funny?
Yeah, I had no idea. You see, I was still at home living with parents, and I didn't really go out much. All I did was go to work, home, program.
Yeah.
I had a lot of disposable cash. I was like, fuck it, I wonder what will happen if I put into Bitcoin. So I started buying Bitcoin, and it went from a few cents, and the price went up and up and up, and my money started doubling.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit. And I was like, fuck, what if I hack other people's Bitcoin accounts?
Yeah.
So I can just get as much as I can.
Nice. That's cool. And the world of cryptocurrency then, now that things have changed a lot more, what do you think is going to be the biggest cryptocurrency?
I'm actually looking at Monero and Ripple at the moment.
Yeah.
Monero, because it's one of the most secure ones. So if I have Monero, it's hard to trace it, essentially.
Mm.
But lately, I haven't been doing a lot of research into cryptocurrency, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it changes pretty fast, though.
Yeah, like, I mean, tomorrow, you know, it goes up, down, left, right, and sideways. Yeah.
It's definitely worth having some and forgetting about it.
And waiting a couple of years.
Yeah, unless you really need to actually use it, which it's not really that useful yet. So
I was staying at Juicy Rentals when I first came down here.
Oh, yeah.
And he was a guy with me. His name was Joe. And one of his close friends down in Christchurch, he buys MDMA for the dark web. Mm. And he uses Bitcoin to purchase it. So he gets at $11 per gram. And in New Zealand, it sells 300 grams.
Shit.
So we nearly made a deal with $50,000.
Yeah.
So I was going to give him a shitload of Bitcoin for $50,000.
Yeah.
But the problem with that was I didn't trust him. And he was, like, he was bigger than the fucking rock. So I thought, if I transfer a couple Bitcoin into the account, and if he says no, he's not going to pay me, I'm fucked.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he'll knock me out with a high five.
Yeah, it's easier to stay away.
Yeah.
It's risky. Yeah, pretty scary. Nice. Are you tempted to do any different form of business, like a cryptocurrency startup or anything, or are you just very happy with hacking?
With cryptocurrency startups, you need a shitload of money to start it up.
Yeah.
Like, you need billions to start it up. And Bitcoin wallets get hacked all the time, and I don't want that to happen to my startup. So I'm going to stay well away from creating my own Bitcoin startup.
Sure.
And just focus on hacking companies and then trying to secure them.
Okay, that's like a good plan. Okay, then what in the world worries you most?
What in the world worries me most?
Yeah.
Spiders.
Really?
Yeah, I'm fucking terrified of spiders.
Okay.
But apart from that, you see, with hacking, you get to a certain point where you've done too much, there's no going back.
Yeah.
So I'll be honest, like, a couple months ago, I was hospitalized. I was put on antidepressants and whatnot. I was speaking to a psychiatrist for ages about hacking because I was just worried I was going to get caught and literally spend the rest of my life in jail. And they put me on sertraline for a couple weeks, and then I started fucking cutting myself and actually hung myself at one point.
Oh, that's extreme.
And I was
extreme.
Put into an induced coma for a couple of days. I came out of it and I just thought, fuck it, anything could happen.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really worry me as much anymore because I could be dead right now.
Mm.
I'm essentially on board time, so I don't care what happens.
Wow, that's mental.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you seem to be a lot more positive now. Crikey.
But yeah, it did used to scare me a lot, thinking every night, it was hard to go to sleep knowing.
Yeah, it sounds kind of like a drug or a drug addiction.
It is, definitely is.
Because I had a lot of friends back when I was 16, 17, started getting into drugs, and sure, I took drugs as well, and it was fun.
Yeah.
But then you just notice, like, some people just start taking them every day, and some people start, like, trying to deal them and sell them, and they're the ones that start getting arrested, and you're like, well, maybe I don't need to go any further into this world. And
yeah.
So, you know, like that with the hack.
Once you've gone down that path for a long time, it's no going back.
Yeah, it's like a really hard route back.
Yeah, and that's what happened to me, starting with Anonymous, taking down banking website and this and that.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds so exciting, but also, like, shit.
And knowing that people that were doing the same hacks as me were getting 10 years in prison.
Yeah, yeah, that's mental.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, yeah, I'm really, really happy to hear that you're doing ethical hacking and stuff then now. Cool. So what do you think, general, I'm just interested in the future. What do you think the world's going to be like in 5 years' time?
I haven't thought of it that much. I live more day to day.
Yeah?
But in 5 years' time, I reckon automation and AI is going to have a huge impact on our everyday lives. It's going to be more, it sounds crazy, but robotics taking over everything. Like, if you had said that 5 years ago, for example, robots will take over our jobs, people would think you're nuts. Mm. If you go to New World now, you get your self-service checkout.
Yeah.
Yeah, they replace people with a machine that does it for you. So I think a lot of it's can be thought that way. And with machines, it's free, it doesn't fuck up, and it sticks, you know, to what it's supposed to do. It doesn't deviate from it.
Yeah, and it doesn't go on a rest or a smoking break or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, Google has came up with an AI that created its own baby AI.
Yeah.
So this artificial intelligence programmed its own baby artificial intelligence, and it programmed it more efficient as well. Mm. So no human could have programmed it that way. And it's more efficient than any other code. So like, knowing that in 5 years' time, you know, when AI is writing its own code that humans can't even understand.
Yeah.
Like that's when it gets scary.
Sure. Does that not worry you for your startup if you're not just going to be able to keep up at all with the hack when things can start being much more secure because the AI can make make it secure.
I'm actually working on an AI at the moment with a hack.
Yeah.
So essentially you can tell, like my home automation, you can tell Jarvis to turn on the lights or whatever. I'm trying to work on a module where you say, Jarvis, gain access to the Apple computer on the network.
Yeah.
Take a screenshot of the screen for me.
Sure.
So that's what I'm working on right now.
Cool.
So even though that stuff's being more secure, I'm trying to work on ways to attack that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like the, you know, the Red Queen hypothesis.
No.
So it's a good book by Matt Ridley. But it's basically, it was sort of all about evolution. And, you know, Alice in Wonderland, there's like the Red Queen. And at one point, Alice is running really fast trying to get somewhere. And the Red Queen is just sort of in front of her being like, you're going to have to run twice as fast if you ever want to go like any further forward. And she's basically constantly going backwards whilst you're trying to go forwards. And it basically, whilst you're innovating and beating, whatever you're competing with is also going to be innovating against you. So if you evolve like a better way to like faster reactions so you can avoid the predator, the predator's going to evolve faster reactions, or kind of stuff. So you feel like you'll be able to keep up then?
I'm trying. I don't know if I, like, the level of sophistication that those, that software has is fucking incredible. Mm. So I mean, if an AI can make its own baby AI, it'll be fucking easy for it to be like, okay, let's make this AI program something to make sure this network cannot be hacked.
Yeah.
And the AI could even make it draw into a honeypot. So if you hack the network, you're not hacking that network. The AI picks it up and draws you into a honeypot where it gathers every bit of information on your computer, hacks your computer, and then reports it.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Oh, so many different things I want to talk about. But yeah, can you just explain honeypot? So when I first heard the term honeypot, it was literally 2 days ago, and I thought it was, you know how like ethical hackers, they just have like bounty. I thought honeypot was a bounty.
Oh, no.
Because it sounds the exact same kind of thing. So I go, oh yeah, cool. If I can hack this, I get into the honeypot. And
right.
But the honeypot is apparently the opposite thing, if you could explain.
So it's a module I've got on my home automation at the moment. A honeypot is when you try and hack into a network or a website or a computer, a honeypot imitates that. It imitates the network. So you think you're breaking into, for example, the Zenby Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
But a honeypot comes up and breaks into that network. And the honeypot gathers information about the hacker's computer. So it stops the hacker attacking the network.
Yeah. And potentially you can then hack the hacker back.
And the hacker will have no idea.
Cool.
So with companies, you know, when they constantly get attacked, they usually set up a honeypot server. So the hacker will think he's gaining access to their network, but in reality, he's just giving away all this information.
Cool. So have you set that up with quite a few of the companies you've worked with then?
No, only with my home automation.
Yeah.
Okay. So with cybersecurity, we don't respond to cyber attacks. We give that to a company called CERT. They're the ones who deal with cyber incidents and cyber responses.
Okay, so you're just finding.
Yeah, we're the ones that will consider.
Okay, have you thought about broadening your services, or are you just interested in hacking?
I have thought about broadening it, but that will come in the future.
Okay, cool.
Still in the startup phase.
Yeah, sure. And then back to AI. Have you done a lot of reading around AI and where it's going, like Super Intelligence, the book? So
one of the latest things at the moment is called Neural Networks. Yeah. Have you heard of that?
The book?
No, Neural Networks.
Just in general?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've been doing a bit of machine learning stuff.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I have heard of neural networks. What's your favorite thing about neural networks?
Just the way it processes information.
Yeah.
It's like how a brain would process information. It's quite cool. Like, for example, the letter 9, right?
Mm.
You'll see a circle at the top and then a line at the bottom.
Yeah.
Instantly, you'll know it's a 9. Even if it's drawn, like, in a random way. Circle at the top and then line. A computer machine learning would look at every individual part, smallest bit of the writing.
Every single pixel.
Yeah. And then it'll go from the first layer, depending on what it activates in the first layer, it'll send it to the second layer to be like, okay, are you sure it matches up? And then it confirms it again, and then it goes down and down and down until it's 100% sure it knows what it's doing.
Mm.
It's this, essentially like a brain. Like, you look at the letter 9, you know it's a letter 9.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy how much better these things are getting. Number, like,
not letter.
Yeah. Cool. And then you mentioned home automation stuff. So what home automation things have you got going?
Have you seen Jarvis from Iron Man?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so essentially you're in your house and you say, hey, Jarvis, how's it going? And it can talk to you, so it has its own personality. And you can say, Jarvis, you know, how's it going? What's the weather like? And if it's too cold in the room, it'll say, hey, it's below your desired temperature, the heat pump on.
Yeah.
And you can just say, yeah, turn it on. How long do you want it on for? Set it for 30 minutes. And then other stuff with the AI is, for example, you leave your house. If you accidentally leave the stove on or a light on, it'll notify you.
Yeah.
Because it knows, it's creepy, but it knows where you are at at all times. So you could be going to the shop and it knows you're at the shop. And then when you come home, the garage knows you're at the garage. So it opens the garage for you and drive in. If it's nighttime, lights will come on depending on what rooms you go into. So you literally don't have to do anything at all. The system knows what you're doing and what you need.
Cool. Okay. Do you think you could run a service of just like setting people's home system up in like an awesome way?
Yeah, that's what we do. So my sales team goes up to like the old guy that has a lot of customer base. He goes up to them and says, hey, have you heard about home automation, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And he talks to them about it. And then he shows them my videos and asks if they want to install. And it's really simple because all you do is you have an Arduino or a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
Connected to a bunch of wires and switches. And the program on that itself is pretty easy. It's straightforward. The AI comes from the phone. So the phone communicates with the Arduino or Raspberry Pi. And it tells it, like, for example, turn on that light.
Mm.
So the phone sends a command to the Arduino telling it to turn on the light. So it's really easy to set up in houses.
Cool. Okay. I'm kind of interested in, just think looking at the world as a hacker, just suddenly everything, if you can hack it, is like, okay, so have you ever hacked into Uber to give yourself a free ride or a free pizza or anything like that?
I've hacked Uber accounts.
Yeah.
Other people's Uber accounts to get free rides, but I've never gone on from my account, got a ride I've never paid for.
Yeah, okay.
I haven't hacked Uber service, but there's people that do it.
Cool. Or like, say you rent a car for like a day, but then you change it, so you actually bought it for a month or anything.
Oh yeah, that would be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I've never done it, but that would be super easy.
Okay. How would you do that?
So when you book a car, they write it on the system. They say, okay, the day you bought it, the day you want to return it.
Yeah.
And then they save it to a file. Now, all it takes is me to plug in a USB for 3 seconds, unplug it, and then modify that file.
Yeah, to be fair, when I booked the car, the lady ran away for sort of literally 5 minutes. I just stood next to her computer whilst she was dealing with something.
So you could have plugged in a USB and accessed that computer anytime you want.
Yeah.
And booked the car for an extra month and say it's been paid for.
Yeah. Oh, perfect. I need to get hold of that USB, apparently. Cool. Ever like got yourself gig tickets or?
You see, I'm extremely neurotic and cautious. So when I do a hack, it's not for personal.
Mm.
It's to either have a laugh or to fuck up the system.
Okay.
See, if I hack Uber from my account and Uber finds out that they've been hacked, it's traced back to me.
Yeah.
I'll get done for it.
Cool. So probably a good philosophy on hacking.
Yeah.
Have you got any other major life tips that you've learned along the way?
Yeah, just don't fucking trust people, man.
Yeah?
Yeah, don't trust people. Make sure your Wi-Fi is turned off when you go into town. Don't join open Wi-Fi networks in town. Because, I mean, you know, as soon as you join the network, someone have access.
Sure. Okay. As a life tip, that seems a bit negative, saying don't ever trust people. I'm quite trusting, but certainly in the eyes of a hacker, I'm definitely like, okay, actually, yeah.
See,
I would definitely not want to trust people. Do you feel that like you are just less trusting in general because if you are in the world of hacking that you're talking about, so kind of nicer to be perhaps more in like the rest of the world, or are you not worrying about these things so much?
If I wasn't a hacker, I would be more trusting people. I'd be open and whatnot. Like when you came here and you said you wanted to interview me, initially I was like, well, what if he's a cop? Like that's just my mentality. Like, you know, there could be a chance that he could be trying to get all this information from me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm always second like question what so my trust levels are extremely low.
And it's hard to be so present in the moment when you've always got like that second line of thought going on.
It does fuck you up.
Definitely. It's nice to see those two sides of like the good and the bad going on. It's like, oh, it's so exciting. Oh, it's really shit. Oh.
Yeah. If you're a black hat hacker, it is scary. If you do more ethical hacking, it's way more
fun. Yeah.
You don't have to look behind your back every day.
Oh, that's good to hear. Okay. What is your most vivid memory from childhood or like the first thing you remember?
My third birthday, I was eating a cake that had a fire truck on it.
Sounds awesome.
I don't know why. I apparently love fire trucks.
Cool.
Yeah, that was my first memory. And then being from South Africa, because I came here when I was 11, so a lot of memories I have is gunshots, having AK-47s pointed at, like trying to run, because we used to carpool as well, so we're driving my mum's car to the shops, and then going to someone else's car to get a ride to school with them.
Yeah.
But running from mum's car to their car, in my sister's jacket, she was covering me up. Because we had guns pointed at us, so we were fucking sprinting and trying not to get shot.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I remember from there. And then I went back 2 years ago, And same shit happened. I was in a pub. I approached this guy and I said hello in English.
Yeah.
And he didn't speak English. So he headbutted me, put a gun to my head and said I have to leave the country.
Wow.
So yeah, that's when I came back.
Yeah, definitely.
So a lot of my memories from South Africa is shit.
Yeah.
A lot of violence.
That's super extreme. Crikey. Yeah, have you been following South Africa in general then? Like, has it always been interesting to you to see like how the country's doing?
It's not interesting. It's more funny.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at the old president, Jacob Zuma, like, motherfucker can't even count. If you watch YouTube videos of him, it's fucking hilarious. He can't pronounce words. He'll be reading a line and he's like, yeah, he just cannot pronounce words. He can't say numbers.
Yeah.
He says like a couple million, he'll be like 1 million, 1,000, 2,000, 300, 5. It's just really fucking hilarious. And he's the president.
Mm.
Yeah.
Crikey.
So it's more funny than interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not bad. Okay, do you have any routines and habits to kind of help keep yourself sane?
Not routines. I try and like mix up my routine all the time. Just because I'm fucking neurotic and because of what I've done. And I know a lot of my friends have people, like private investigators after, or police after them. And after a while, if the police monitor you, they know your habits. They know what you do. They know where you go. So for example, 5 o'clock tonight, I know this guy's going to be at the pub. So I try and mix things up so no one can really guess what I'm going to next.
Okay, cool. So does that mean you also try and just always do things various? So like one day you'll order like a pineapple pizza, but the next day it's like, I'll never have pineapple again. It's just going to be random.
Yeah, like different order.
Place.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's weird to explain. It's just I try and not do things the same over and over again. I try and make different.
Okay. And then so they're kind of annoying that you can never have like the same routine. Because I find that's a bit hard as when you're being a nomad. It's sometimes really nice to just like stay in place for 2 weeks and have a bit of a routine. Yeah. And like know what's going to happen next.
Yeah. It is good having a routine, but I've got so used to mixing things up. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
So it's like a new thing every day.
Okay. Kind of cool. So you are living as a nomad though at the moment?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm right now at a backpacker and I'm going to go back to Wellington. And stay at a backpacker there as well.
Yeah.
The thing about that is because of my fucking horrible suicidal tendencies, I find it safer to be around people.
Yeah.
So definitely. I don't, if I'm alone in a house with my thoughts, like, it can get pretty fucking insane.
Wow. Interesting. So yeah, do you ever take drugs?
Oh yeah, a shitload of weed, as much as smoke.
Yeah.
Usually.
Is that where that like slows you down a lot?
Yeah, it slows me down. I can't, it sounds weird, but I can't program when I'm sober.
No way.
I write a couple lines of code when I'm sober and just give up, it's not interesting.
Yeah.
Where I have a couple of joints and then I'm writing like 2,000 lines of code in an hour.
Wow. That's funny. Yeah, I had a friend that sort of was a good coder, but then he's just always really negative about it. But if he was on acid, he'd be like, "What coding?" And you're like, "Bro, what? How have you taken so much acid? I can't even see. What are you doing?" That's mental. But yeah, that's really interesting. Maybe I should try taking more drugs when I'm coding. It seems to be going all right for me with that.
And then also because I was put on antidepressants, I found weed is a lot better.
Yeah,
it does the same thing, and there's no side effects to it.
No, that's good. Yeah, it depends. For me, weed kind of has a bit of a side effect. It gives me like anxiety and stuff, and actually makes me more depressed. So yeah, it's unfortunate.
When I first started smoking, I used to always get paranoid.
Yeah.
No,
maybe it's just like mindset.
I used to hate smoking weed.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what clicked, but all of a sudden I loved
it. Yeah. Well, if it works, it works, I guess. Do you have anything else that you would say you're sort of addicted to or anything other than hacking and weed? And
That's mainly what my life consists of.
Yeah.
Is being on my computer, trying to break into systems, having a bit of fun.
Yeah.
And smoking shit out of weed.
What would happen if you didn't have weed or a computer for a whole week?
Yeah, I'd lose my mind.
Okay.
Absolutely lose my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. With weed, it's okay. Since I've been down here, I haven't had any. I've been completely fine. But if someone took my computer away,
yeah,
I'd lose my
mind. What if they didn't take your computer away, but you just couldn't use it, but you knew it was safe?
I know. I just couldn't imagine a life without me being on a computer for a single day without using a computer.
Wow. That's funny. Yeah, I went to a thing called a Rainbow Gathering last month, which is like a no-tech kind of like hippie community thing. And it was actually really nice, but it was a bit stressful just not being able to use it. And it's a bit of like a, you know, when you're trying to get into like a cold swimming pool and it's like, oh, fuck's sake, oh, you can't do it. And if you just jump in, it's like, oh, it's fine.
Yeah.
It was kind of like that. As in, like, you just jump in, like in the special, and like no one has any tech. And suddenly it's like, oh, this is quite nice. Like, because no one was ever on their mobile phone or anything. And no one even knew what the time was. And everything was very like, you just spoke to everyone. Everyone was really warm. And it's kind of cool. And it was just nice, like how much time you have in the day to do these other things that turns out you do like doing, like playing guitar, reading, going for walks and playing stupid games. But I wonder if it would just make you
absolutely mental.
So would Do you feel like computer then is more sort of your friend or like the safest place to be?
Yeah, like computer for me is essentially my best friend. I trust it. It won't fuck me over. I control what it does and it can't do anything bad to me.
Mm.
Whereas a person can. Person fuck you up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, sometimes it is a bit weird when you're a bit stressed and you're just like, go on your computer and you don't even know why you're there. You're just like, oh, I just wanted to be on my computer. And then it's like, okay, well, now I'm here. What are you going to do? And yeah, it's like a human problem these days. Cool. And then is there anything else you wanted to add that we haven't spoken about?
I think we covered most of
it. Yeah, I've covered quite a lot. An hour and 12 minutes of conversation now.
Oh, shit.
Which is good. And then is there anything else you want to ask me?
Not that I can think of at the moment.
Cool. No worries. Okay. Just to put your worries at rest on the terms of the podcast, it may take 3 to 6 months before I actually get around to editing and putting it live.
Yeah, that's
good. So just in case you're like worrying like 3 months later, why is this guy not like put this anywhere or sent me a message? I have a backlog of like 20 other podcasts to get through, and ideally I'd like to publish one a week, but then sometimes life happens and it takes like 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. And
just to be safe, like I'm not going to give you a number or add you anything. I'm just going to keep it like that. We can post it.
Yeah, normally I take people's like Twitter handles so people can get in touch, but I can not do that.
Yeah, just because I don't want this related to me at all.
Yeah, sure. I did mention your name, I think, at the start, but I could take that.
That's right. And pretty sure you didn't mention my last name, and a lot of people have the name Dylan.
Yeah, there's a lot of Sam Harris's. So even if your full name is pretty hard to find me on Facebook, but cool. Thanks a lot. This is really, really interesting.
Thanks for that.
Is there a way I can ever get in touch with you somehow that would be like
Over anonymous RC chat?
Okay, we'll work that out off the podcast, I guess. Awesome. Well, yeah. Anyway, thank you very much.
Fuck you. That was crazy.
So that was a sick podcast. I hope you agree. Just to talk myself up a bit. I left the nugget in at the end about me not publishing for 6 months or so, just as a bit of insight into the fact that I am still quite terrified of somehow giving him the impression that I'm an undercover cop or something, and to also announce the great news that I'm very nearly caught up with all my recordings from the year of travels that I've just had. So after a few more releases, we will be back in the present day, and the show will start having content from like recent meetings and things. So that's going to be awesome and really, really happy about that. We're also going to have a review episode from my year of traveling the world at the same time as making money whilst doing it, which should hopefully give you guys some insights into how to be more of a nomad and have fun and do things like meeting mental people and stuff. So that would be a great way to round off the season. And then next season, I'm going to have some amazing, cool entrepreneurs and scientists and just fantastic people lined up already for the show. So I'm super excited about things. One other interview in this final season wrap up is introduced me to the dark web, where he put me in touch with an actual real life hitman. Like, totally legit, this person spends his life killing people for money, which is mental, completely mental. It's a concept that I thought only existed in movies, and I don't know, didn't really feel like actually going on right now kind of thing. But yeah, totally a thing. You can get people killed for money, which I guess makes sense. I did almost meet him, but logistics were very complex. And to be honest, the audio would have been terrible, because to be able to meet him, I would have to be in a moving car in India, which is just like a double awful on sound. And he also would need to be wearing a helmet and a mask kind of thing. And so it would have been terrible. And then, just never quite managed to be able to meet up anyway. And maybe it's for the best that I haven't ever met a real life hitman, and perhaps he doesn't have a reason to kill me in the future. So that's nice for me. But we did get to have a conversation, and it is quite mind-blowing, and I'm sure you will learn lots from that as well this season. So exciting times for the podcast. Back to this episode. It was a really interesting experience just talking to about all the kind of hacks and leaks and exposures that you're around all the time. He actually demo hacked a few websites for me, just probably to show off. It was pretty fun. And we didn't do anything malicious with what we found. It was just more of this is how you do it. And he did hack the Wi-Fi network that we were on. And that was ridiculously easy. It took like 5 seconds. So he seems to know what he's talking about and is quite legit. And he definitely does have a buttload of Bitcoin. stealing 45 Bitcoin is mental. I would definitely live in permanent fear that someone was going to send a hitman after me if I'd done that, which, especially now that I know that hitmen exist, I would not be doing any stealing of Bitcoin anytime soon. But my main take-homes from the podcast, 1. Don't trust people with your stuff. With all the data issues lately, this seems fairly poignant, but remember to share the least amount of data you can with any company. Keep your public profiles limited where possible, and more importantly, use two-factor authentication for literally any account of any value. And never go onto public Wi-Fi, just don't do it. And absolutely never leave your computer turned on when you leave a room, which is something I've definitely been guilty of when going to like the toilet if I'm working in a cafe, for example. Just don't do it. 3 seconds is all a hacker needs to get control of your computer, and then they can steal all of your Bitcoin or bank accounts or anything else that you've got on there. So it's just not worth it for just shutting your computer lid for a few seconds. Learn more about networking. In general, I've never known that much about how many vulnerabilities there are and how the world around me works that I interact with every day. So learning more about networks and networking is now a much higher priority for me, and seems a little bit ironic because I spent a year with partly working as a network engineer. But yeah, I don't know half of what's going on. So I think we can all learn a bit more about networks. 3. Don't be a dick. The world of hacking and getting free money can seem very appealing, but it super messes with your head and can lead to putting you into situations that you just can't go back from. So even making this interview, I felt a little bit like I was on a border of like a cliff that I could never come back up if I went too far down it, if you know what I mean? And knowing too much is just, kind of a dangerous thing to do if you're then become a target for someone. So yeah, generally stay away from the world of hacking and bad things, and the appeal of free money or anything is never as good as it sounds and it will always come at a cost. Sticking to purely ethical hacking is just an absolute must if you want to go into the area. And if Dylan's inspired you to look more into hacking and things, then just play it safe, be clean, like don't fuck up other people's lives. There's no need to, because it might well come back and bite you as well. On to books. We only spoke briefly about books. I mentioned The Red Queen by Matt Ridley, which is a great book for those interested in science or business and technology, kind of about the endless cycle to outcompete and just to be able to maintain where you're at. So it is relevant really in most things, even though the book is specifically about biology. But yeah, it's cool and I would really recommend it. And yeah, that's about it. Said he'd send me some news about any potential crazy hacks that were going on with Anonymous if he's involved, but he obviously did not provide any details, and so I have no idea if I will become a source of potential big attacks and things, or if I'll never hear about anything again. But who knows, and I'll be happy to share any cool stuff that's going on and news and things. And on that note, I hope you learn lots about the world that you live in and interact with every day, and that you feel a little bit smarter and wiser, and that you have two-factor authentication for all of your Bitcoin. And if you are feeling super smarter now about the world around you, thanks to the content on this episode, try and think of just one friend who would benefit from hearing this podcast as well, and try sending it to them, because you can do both me and them a massive favor. And then life will be wonderful and fantastic, and I will be very happy. And so will you, because you've done something nice. And yeah, have an amazing week, and I will talk to you again soon in the next episode. Boom.
So firstly, just to do a quick sound check. What did you have for breakfast?
But, vodka.
Vodka. Oh, good.
You've listened to an episode of the Growth Mindset Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your preferred app and give me a good rating. If you are unable to give good feedback right now, try sharing the show with a friend who will, or just wait for the show to improve. If you have any ideas for the show, or you just want to reach out, I'd love to talk to you. On Twitter, I am at SamHarrisTweets, or Instagram, SamJamSnaps. Show notes, along with links to everything that we discuss, are available at growthmindsetpodcast.com. Along with information on how to get involved and blog posts on cool things that you should be aware of. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy your next podcast.